Well, maybe we should start again this afternoon. I introduced myself this morning and went into a long song and dance about why I'm here. I won't repeat all of that, but this is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and my name is Tom Berger, and I've been asked by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People to travel around the state of Alaska to each region to see what Alaska Natives think about ANCSA, about the way it's worked over the last 12 years, the things that have worked out well, the points about which they may have complaints. I'm concerned, of course, about 1991 about subsistence and sovereignty and all the other issues that are linked to these questions of Native ancestral lands and Native government in Alaska. We've been holding meetings and hearings now since late February. We've been to Amonik and Tununik on the west coast. We've been to Copper Center and Gulkana in the Otna region. We had a hearing yesterday at the University of Alaska here at Fairbanks, and the Native students on the campus had asked us to come and hold a hearing there, and it lasted all day yesterday. It was well attended. 33 Native students on the campus and a number of faculty members spoke to the commission, giving me their views about ANCSA 1991 and all of these other questions. So I'm pleased that we're able to be here in Fairbanks. We started this hearing this morning here at the Polaris Hotel, and we heard from quite a few people this morning, including Spud Williams of TCC and Sam Dementiev of Doyen Corporation and quite a few others. So I'm glad that you're all here this afternoon, and we have a list if you want to sign it about speaking, but we'll just carry on informally. And the statements that are made are recorded by Jim Sykes, who's with me on the tape, and then are typed up, and there will be a complete transcript of all that is said, and that the tapes and the transcript are being sent to the University of Alaska at Fairbanks simply to hold them, to keep them, so there'll be a permanent record of all that is said. The transcripts are available and can be ordered, and when I write my report next year, after I've traveled to every region, I will base it on what you tell me at these meetings, and there will be a permanent record of what is said at these meetings, so that it will be possible to be certain what Alaska Natives think, how far you've come in the last 12 years, where you want to go in the years that lie ahead, between now and 1991 and after 1991. So with that, we can begin. If you wouldn't mind just coming and sitting here so we can get everything you say down on the electronic equipment, and it'll go on the tape. You don't have to have a prepared presentation in writing. Whatever is on your mind, that will be satisfactory. We could start with Paul Blank. I think you said you had to get away soon this afternoon. So please join us.
I'm Paul Blank. I'm Aleut from the chain. And sorry I missed you in Anchorage, but I've been traveling all over the state. For the state. And So I'm going to kind of ramble because I don't have any. I just kind of wandered in here today. So what I want to say, that even though I'm living in the Rail Belt now, I'll be living in Sutton as of June, that I feel that the biggest issue and the overriding issue for all Native peoples in Alaska is the 1991 issue of land loss. I know that even though I'm living in the Rail Belt, that if I know my land isn't there anymore, that to me that's cultural, that would be cultural genocide. And if that took place, I don't see why that the physical suicide shouldn't be the natural follow-up to that. I would feel the same way for anyone, Athabascan, Yupik, for any of my distant relatives in the state who would lose their land. Would be a loss to anyone, no matter what region they live in. I feel that the corporations have their place in an economic sense to try and bring up the, to improve the personal economics of each individual Native, since we've been sort of have to live with the reality that economics will be a part of our situation from now on. I also feel that we're in real danger of losing our right to subsist. I know that during the last election, I was involved in the movement to kill the anti-subsistence initiative, Proposition 7, that I'm sure most people know about. And it was real scary talking to the people that sponsored this and with the support that they had within Alaska. They really feel that we as Native people don't have a right to our land exclusively. They really feel that they have as much right as we do because they're Americans and we are too. And that to me is a tremendous threat. I feel that the corporation shouldn't have their economic place but have no place holding onto our land. That the land should be exempt, tax exempt, because it's always been tax exempt. We've never been taxed for our land. The corporate structure is causing us to fight among ourselves for the first time, village versus regional. I think if we allow the land to stay within corporate hands, that it will cause the cultural destruction of all Natives within Alaska. And I couldn't live with that. And I'm pretty sure that most Native people, whether they live in the villages or in the cities, couldn't live with that thought either, much less the reality. And I really feel that the land should be put into whatever status each individual region chooses, be it IRAs or tribal governments or elders, or whatever, just whatever form of government that the people in each region choose. But I don't feel that the corporate structure is the place to place our future in, our future being in. And I certainly don't feel that any individual Native, the temptation will be great in 1991 to sell stock. And I don't feel that anyone, no individual Native, has the right to sell that stock, because no one has the right to sell the future of the kids. That's not a right that anyone holds in their hand. And that was my message.
Well, Thank you very much. Very thoughtful message.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. I'm glad you caught up with us. The next name I have is Henry Kinneparick from Barrow. Yes, sir.
I have some questions here that I'd like to have clarified before I do anything else. First of all, the question in my mind has always been the Alaska Native people as citizens of the United States. Now, what takes place when, how does a Native person that have been dragged into another government from one form of government become a citizen of the United States, although it's practically against their own will? From what I remember, there wasn't too many people of the state, too many people of Alaska that had voted for statehood, especially the people in the rural areas. And the question is, it just seems that every place I go in the rural areas throughout Alaska, the people's question have never been fully answered. Why were they dragged into the statehood in the first place? And what is their status as a citizen? How do they become a citizen when they are dragged into one form of government from the other? And from what I have heard, talking with different people in different areas, they feel that they have been dragged into something against their own will. And I would also like to know what percentage of the Native people of Alaska had voted for statehood in the first place. And from what I have experienced and what I have seen, people coming in from other nations, other countries, they have to study just about everything, the Constitution and the whole bit of the United States in order to become a citizen, and then therefore in turn sworn in as a citizen. When Alaska became a state, as I said, it seems that it was against the will of the biggest majority of the Native people. So therefore, how do they become a citizen of the United States without ever being sworn in? Truly, we are all Americans, but for many years, the Alaskans have been treated as second-class citizens and still are treated as second-class citizens. So I myself feel that I am not a United States citizen, although I am a true American. And these are the questions that have been asked me that I couldn't answer, that I couldn't answer for myself. And these are questions that I'd like to have verified so we know where we stand as citizens, if we are citizens. And just until a few years back, we were not able to vote. We weren't able to do anything to function within the United States government. And how are we then able to function within the United States government if we have never been sworn in? as citizens of the United States. Although we are truly Americans, we are still treated as second-class citizens. And after that, then I will learn to understand what the ANCSA is really doing for us, what the government is doing for us. Until then, I don't think I'll be able to understand that. And neither will a biggest majority of the people, the native people in the rural areas.
Well, I think your questions are really designed to put the whole issue into context, but the U.S. Congress passed a law saying that Alaska Natives were citizens of the United States, and since the law was passed, that meant that Alaska Natives didn't have to be sworn in. It would have been a little... It would have been strange to have people who'd lived here for thousands of years being sworn in as if they had just gotten off the boat from Asia or Africa or someplace.
And on the other hand, we were never part of the United States before it became a state. We were a territory.
Yes.
It was a different nation altogether.
Well, the territories...
Although we were a ward of the government at that time.
Well, the territory of Alaska was actually part of the United States of America. You asked why were Native people made citizens of Alaska in 1958. Well, no one's a citizen of Alaska. You are citizens of the United States of America and residents of Alaska. You could travel from Alaska to Oregon or California without a passport. Your citizenship remains the same. Your residency changes from Alaska to Oregon to California. You asked what percentage of Alaska Natives voted for statehood in 1958. I don't know. I don't know whether records were kept that would show what percentage of Alaska Natives voted for statehood. I'm not much help to you, but that's the best I can do.
And another question is, does the Aboriginal rights still valid to the people of the of Alaska, even after ANCSA?
Well, ANCSA says in the Claims Act, Congress said the Aboriginal title of the Aboriginal peoples of Alaska is hereby canceled. So Congress said in 1971 that you don't have Aboriginal title anymore. That's what they said, and they're the Congress. I'm not. Now there are. And we heard this morning from Mike Wallery, who's a lawyer for Tanana Chiefs. He said that the Aboriginal right of Alaska Natives to govern themselves, to be to have their own tribal councils and pass their own laws. That had not been taken away. He said that that's an Aboriginal right that can still be claimed by Alaskan Natives. Now, your questions are pretty difficult, and some of them, I suppose, we don't know the answers to yet. But that's what Mr. Wallery said this morning.
And if I remember right, at the time of the purchase of Alaska from Russia by the United States, there was a promise by the United States that the United States would protect the Aboriginal rights of Alaska. And why then, therefore, was it broken when ANCSA came about?
Well, I suppose, and we heard from some of the people who wrote ANCSA, some of the men in Washington who at the time were congressional aides who helped to write ANCSA, they said, well, the $962.5 million that was paid under ANCSA was to recompense Alaska Natives for the loss of the land taken from them since 1867, and the 44 million acres, of course, was the amount of land that it was agreed they should keep. Like you, I'm trying to learn what's going on here and get the answers to these questions, and the people I've heard testifying have told me this, and they seem to know what they're talking about, and that's what they say happened. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but that's what they say happened.
What would be the best route to find out more about these problems that I have just asked?
Well, I don't know. You could...
Would that be with the senators, or would that have to be amongst the Native leaders and the corporations?
Well, you could try both, I guess. They're all working for you in one way or another.
Okay, thank you. That's all okay. I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Darlene Herbert of...
I need more time on mine.
Okay. Lucy... Alberta?
Abeda,
sorry.
My heritage is that my mother is from Fort Yukon, and my father resides outside. He's non-native. And I was living outside at the time when ANCSA was being developed. And I was young, and it scared me, you know. I thought, what is this, you know? And it angered me also because it seemed like, well, there's this energy crisis, so they're going to push through the land claims so that the pipeline can go through. And as I grew older and began to know more and more about ANCSA, I'm a member of the Doyon Corporation, and we recently lost $21 million, and it didn't surprise me. It's not that I don't care what happens, but it seems like, or I know that the United States trying to institute this corporation method through the Alaska Natives. It's the only country in the world which has expected indigenous people to come from a culture which they've been able to survive in such a harsh climate and to become business people. And going back to Doyon, it didn't surprise me. And the bottom line of a corporation is you have to make money. And that's, I don't feel like that's the kind of people we are. And it seems like the corporations were set up through ANCSA just so that they could fail, so that in 1991 we would be without anything. And I have a lot of respect for the our Native leaders. But as I was voting for board members this past annual meeting, I looked at my proxy and I thought, this is like a meal I don't want to eat. You know, these people probably could be leaders, good leaders, if it weren't for this corporation setup. And it seems like in order to make this corporation method survive, we have to hire people who are not Native, and they get the money. And what do we have, you know? We have less and less, and more importantly, we are not our own leaders. And another feeling that bothered me while I was voting, I thought, is this the heritage I'm going to pass down to my children? You know, this little piece of paper. I just feel like it wasn't the route to go, that we're being forced into something that is totally alien to our way of life. And there's no doubt about it that Native people are capable. Otherwise, we would have been dead a long time ago. But I really question whether we're capable of trying to pull in big money and trying to solve the 1991 issue, because I really do feel like it was set up to fail. And I think these hearings are good, and I was kind of disturbed at the lack of information in the news, Minor. It seemed like they're kind of ignoring what's going on here. I really think there should be more people here saying what they feel, because there's a lot of people that are really frustrated with the turnout of ANCSA and the lack of money and land that people are receiving. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Darlene Herbert, and I was born in Fort Yukon, Alaska, and I grew up in Fort Yukon. I went to school in Fairbanks, California, and graduated in Fort Yukon. And I've been noticing that there have been so much studies on Alaskan Natives, but I don't know where it's getting us. I mean, everybody's been studying us, but where are we at so far, you know? I mean, what are all these studies for? I mean, it takes time for somebody to come and interview us and all that. Well, I think, you know, they should come and pay us to be interviewed. That way we'll get something out of it. But that's, you know, not what I'm here for. What I'm here for is I was working up on the pipeline. I work up on the pipeline about from 74 to 78. And now I notice that a lot of companies are joint venturing with corporations. And I went up on a job and worked 6 months. And then I noticed a lot of discrimination is going on. And I think like a lot of these corporations are going to be, you know, more and more of this is going to go on where companies will want to joint venture with corporations. And this discrimination's got to be stopped, because this is only the beginning. And you need more Native people up there on the pipeline. You hardly see any Natives up there. Like, I've been up there on one camp, and there's probably 600 people up there. Maybe about, I counted out 5 Natives. But I think my beef is that I think the corporations should pay more attention to who they're joining with, and watch the discrimination. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Heffel, if you're free now and you're not going to get in trouble with the courts.
Name's John Heffel, and I'm president of the Association of Tour Eskimos. And the main reason I came up here is all the things that these people see, what's happening right now, they're hollering tribal sovereignty, problems with the lands claims. I brought up in 1970, 71, and then again in the paper in 1975, and I was called an alarmist that what you foresee will never happen. And here we are today. It just took a while. I'm not a soothsayer, but I could read. The biggest problem with land claims is when the guys first got together a long time ago and started. Because the government, especially the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Department of Interior, let's show 93638, Indian Self, which is an individual, when I went to school. Determination and Education Act. So there's testimony after testimony about the word tribes, which was fine for the lower 48, but there's villages here. It didn't fit the people. Didn't fit nothing. When it came out, if you read a little portion, yay big, Federal Register, it says, although we have had testimony to the contrary, we feel it's in the best interest of these people. You have too much white people, the Ashendis, the white eyes. They come up and always try to tell the native people what's the best for them. Case in point, Eskimo Village. It's been here, was the inception of, in the early 1940s, Second World War, 30 families brought down. They put them on what's now Garden Island Liquor Store. It's called Eskimo Camp. They had them in these boxcars for a while, and then they moved them on to, by the roundhouse, James Ways.
When did you say that was, during the war?
Yeah, during the war. And the letters, which somehow disappeared, used to be in the files of the railroad, they were given a choice, army or work for your government, for defense. Well, it's one way to make money, and some of them were too old to go in the army anyway. But they came down, and the village went on and on and on and on. Traditional council, minded their own business, their own affairs. And one day in 1961, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, name is Bob Carroll, come up and had a meeting. And said that he's picked some land that's on South Cushman area. Turned out to be the end of Lathrop. It's a mud road, and when the springtime came, there's old pictures that shows that you stood in mud up to your knees. It's 92 feet of permafrost. But that was your own village, hooray. Big deal. And then all the time, and then right when the land claims came and we put in for his village, they said, we'll have to check on it. Well, you know, this is 1984, and they're still checking. They come up again with the word tribe. What tribe are you? Who are you? And yet, in order to get water and sewer in a village, you must be a village. They cannot hook up a church nor a store. It has to be homes. And PHS, Public Health Service, Indian Health Service, puts it in. Well, we've got it. Now, it's right there. It's one of two things. If you're a village and you got it, fine. If you're not and they put it in, then they misused government funds, correct? Can't be. We can't be both. It's got to be one or the other. And this is only one of the things. And I've heard that one girl from talking like Minto. Trying out loud, you go down there and non-native people be running all over, shooting all this stuff, shooting the game, and they kept saying, well, this land claims was to give the people back their land. And at that time, even till back in the 70s, mainly 74, really hard, is they've lost the tribal rule, ruling themselves. They've got laws upon laws that a lot of the people really don't understand. And they just keep heating them on and heating them on and taking, never giving. They didn't give the people back, you know, what they say, we gave you land or we gave you. No, you stole the reference. You stole millions of acres. Fish and game, they holler about the people going over and shooting the game when someone dies. That's traditional. It's been going on ever since I can remember. But yet fish and game goes over and they'll arrest him and throw him in jail. Then it becomes an argument. Is it state court or federal court? Who has jurisdiction? Title 28, 1360 states in there it gives the option to a state to assume jurisdiction over Indians on Indian land. The option. With the consent of the tribes involved. Then you must amend your constitution and or create a statute for the assumption. That's never been done. The Indians still rule themselves. Yet fish and game will come in. And then they say, well, gee whiz, if a native went out and shot three moose and it's out of season, my lord, the moose is going to deplete. Baloney. Denali Highway, back in the, well, I got out of the Army in 46 and in Anchorage, and you look to Denali, you could spend 3 or 4 days and watch caribou cross before they tied it all the way across into Cantwell. Suddenly, the big state, when it got statehood, they decide there's lots of caribou. So instead of one or two a year, they decide, let's shoot four. Well, I don't know how many people here from around that up at Eagle area, but 1965, we counted in excess of 1,500 animals approximately 4.5 miles off the road that the headhunters shot. Some were stacked, some were just shot and left. Other guys would shoot one, and they'd just leave them. But did they do anything? No, they went up to Eagle and said, go down and try to salvage what you can. But nobody was looked in. It was all the Army guys. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago now when they had the bow hunting at 5 Mile, caribou along there. And we don't know what happened to the pictures. They got processed and just disappeared. These guys are shooting from with bow and arrows from the back of pickups. And if they shot one and he fell down, fine. If he run off back towards the pipeline way back, let him go. There's more here. They waste it. And the native don't. He eats everything and he takes everything. And yet you have the thing, there's the same old song, we know what's good for you. And they don't. And if you do get up and speak like right here, nothing against you, don't misunderstand that. But I've been talking even on the sea mammal bill, and it suddenly become from a hearing, because I was only one to speak for the Inupiaqs here in Fairbanks, it became an informal hearing or meeting, and they didn't even record nothing. They let you talk, and it's kind of like a campfire. Smoke goes up, and it just disappears. You can see it here, and it's gone there. Then they rush back to wherever they came from, Virginia, or they made a study on the natives and the dropout problem in education. BI gave them $100,000, right? It was 5 people, and 1 girl didn't have enough brains, to come out of a snowstorm. Gee, I think she was half nuts. And they're from Salt Lake City, Utah, that Mormon college. BI gave them. Why didn't they find some of these native people that speak English and Indian and lived over there and give those people that money and let them go up and ask their own people, Mary Jane, why don't you go to school? How come you dropped out? And let her tell you. No, they gave them a form, and these are on file to BIA. Read them. It's got a lot of them. It's none of your business. I don't want to discuss it. Personal reasons, sickness in the family. So they made the big study, and that was the end of it. It's just more money spent for useless things. They just keep it up and keep it up. And I, you know Nathaniel Johnson? He's Canadian. He's Canadian Indian, and I wrote to him in Whitehorse when their land claims were going on, and I warned him. And I said, if you get books and all the data you can on the Land Claims Settlement Act, don't make the mistakes that the Native people did here. They thought they were getting something, and they put in these small print, and you lose everything. Keep your identity, keep your tribal rule, the sovereignty, government to government, and preserve and protect your old ways, your hunting and fishing rights. And by George, they got them. You see, I've seen, I don't know how many these Native people that I've known since they were little grow up. They got any Native corporations. I would venture to say, probably we'll say 1 out of 10 really knows corporate structure. And they're stuck into this world, so the same people are running. If the people say something, they practically ignore it. Becomes a big circle, round, same people. And I don't see anybody benefit, and I don't see anybody that I know. Grandma died at 92, and she had a new house, BIA, HIP program. Not a village corporation or mill. They didn't build her a new home, the government again. And you tell them so-and-so is in trouble, needs a lawyer, and don't have any money. Well, we're like, I was told right out, we're like General Motors Corporation. He's just a stockholder. No, he's not just a stockholder. He's Alaskan Native, or she is. And that corporation is supposed to represent them and speak for them. They should come back to these people and say, what do you want or what you need, and see they get it. That was the purpose. But somewhere along the line, it just got all misshapen. All the ideals that people hadn't thought they were going to get is gone. And it's going and going. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. And I feel like this is, first you steal somebody's land and you take their money, and then they got, the only thing they got left is their pride, and you take that and you got nothing. But the people still got their pride, and they don't give that up. The government is supposed to be protectors of the Indians, and they don't. Arch Johnny Tahluk, he died March 1st, he's 90. They say he's 92, but a white man come up and said, your name is Arctic Man, I'll give you mine as John, you're Arctic Johnny Tahluk, and you were born so-and-so. The land up at Nugget Creek goes back in his family. He was the last of his tribe. When he died, the tribe's no more, but he was the last. And it goes back 250 years, that tribe roamed that valley, when that Wiseman Coldfoot, they used to go to Onuktuvik Pass and walk to Barrow to trade. He's got a Native allotment. He suddenly found out. They gave him his land, 1971. They let him file. In 74, Alyeska built a pipeline, and the state took the road over in 78, and they said, now we've got it. And they tell the Native people, we're trying to simulate into the 20th century. We're trying to put you on an equal footing as your white brothers. Baloney. Because Heffel versus State 81. I took the state to court to find out who has jurisdiction on Native land, and it has to be the federal government. But the state got in permanent injunction against me because I blocked the whole road twice, because that man don't speak very little and can't read or write English. But he knows his own language, and he knows everything. He's a highly intelligent man. But they still got it. And even going to federal court, and Judge Bonderheit ruled under the Constitution of the state and the United States government to condemn Indian land, you must go to court, file condemnation. Then you've got to put money into the court for what you think is a fair market value at time of taking. Well, I won that case. I've been in court on that case about 11 times. And the judge ruled that. That was September last year. State's still driving. If I want to go up there, I got to get a permit. Unless it's June 1 to September 1. That's when the tourists, the outsiders, can run up and down there all day long. He was denied to go to his own land. They said, one, he could dog team, or he could snowshoe, or he can walk. But they wouldn't give him a permit to drive. Alyeska. The law also says to condemn land, it cannot be a private entity. Now, you can condemn for railroads or utility lines, whether it's oil is considered a utility. So they could condemn the land for that reason, but it can't be. It's got to be every oil company that's involved. Alyeska is a service company. I've proven that, and the court says you're right. And they've still got the land, and they haven't paid. That old man died with nothing. He didn't get nothing off his land. He can't even hardly use it because they cut it up in three ways. They ruined the fishing. He had a house, and he used to catch whitefish in the center. Whitefish aren't there. He wanted to know where the tutu was, Eskimo caribou. Where are they gone? I raised my family right here shooting them. They're gone. The moose are gone. Alyeska will take you up north and show you all these big pictures of caribou eating around the pipeline. Big deal. They don't give a darn. And every time, and I'd venture say like today when I was going to speak this morning, I had two cases in court. And they differentiate between the natives and the non-natives right there. The city itself has selective law enforcement because they'll arrest a native because he's got an open bottle. That's a major crime. The next block, a woman's getting raped, and two blocks over, somebody's getting stabbed. But they found a native with a bottle. Boy, it took real training and good investigation. But when they have, I can't think of, maybe one of you people would know, it's in the summer, they have this golden days. They have golden days, and I took pictures and showed them. 23 Tunics, white people, drinking on the floats in the courier. It's against the law. I was told if I, as a native Ho-Ho leader, would write a letter, the council would consider, during like dog race something, not enforcing the law. I asked, did the Chamber of Commerce, did they write you a letter and get approval? Well, no. Why does a native have to do something that a white man don't, and yet you say the natives are equal? No answer. Check how many natives are working. You will see that if you take it on when the, especially firefighting for additional income, I would say it's 10% of the time they're working. The other 90% they're unemployed. About 98% of the time. And the population, you know, the major portion are not working. They're 17 are now working for the borough. Because I shouldn't put it that way, but I jam natives down their throat. When you've got a population that's supposed to be 17%, there should be then, if you've got 285 employees proportionally, a certain pound, you've got blacks and you've got women, you've got Hispanics and Asians. Where in the hell's the natives? I just wrote to President Reagan. I didn't get an invite to go out and meet him. I didn't expect it. But I asked him that question. I'd like an answer. Statistics show black, Hispanics, Caucasians, and Asians, unemployment. And then how many have got employed? Have you ever seen statistics on Indians? And I asked him why. The only time I see an Indian is vote when somebody comes down and says, I'm running for office, vote for me because I'm going to do you a lot. And I've heard it time after time. And then when they get in, they forget who you are. They don't need you no more. And when they appoint certain people, and I won't mention her name, I called her up with some problem with two elderly Eskimo ladies and one Indian with his longevity bonus and some of the other things. I'll look into it. 2 weeks in Anchorage, nothing. Called Juneau. I got so busy in other things, I forgot. Yet, they put her in the paper. She is pointed right from the governor's office for native problems because she's native. No, she's not native. She's Tunic. She may look native, but she thinks white. That's one thing. But when you start selling yourself to someone else and hide what you are, there's too many of them people way before this land claims. I've seen them down in the bars. I've seen them growing up. I've seen them laborers, cab driver, and everything else. And suddenly they wear a suit and a shirt and a tie, and now they become Rockefeller. They live in fancy, big fancy homes, and the people are living in the same old damn cabins that I've been ever since I can remember. Living the same damn way and just minding their own business. But you go up there and ask for something, and it's again this corporate structure, Bull. In 19, John Borbridge and I got in an argument, if he'll remember, his daughter does, Sandra, over reservations and this corporate structure. And I said, well, not reservations per se, but what you should do is take all this land and then have the tribal council run it like a reservation. Keep the government out and let the Indians go ahead and take care of their own land, their own fishing, their own hunting, and leave them alone, and they can take the money, and I forget it, I'm not good at math, but I felt that something like each native at that time would have got like $17,707 and some cents, more or less. It's okay, you got the land, and then you tell them, okay, you've got that land, it's over here, go build a cabin anywhere you want. Once they do, then we'll mark off. But you can hunt and fish and trap anywhere you want, but that's your home right there for sure. And here's your money. Now you can do with what you want. But again, Grandma, when she died, she got about $3,200, about 8 years from the land claims. The land claims begins with, it states on there for the natives to share equally. How can you share something equally when somebody stands up in a $400 suit, $800 shoes or whatever they pay for them fancy things, driving big cars and living in $130,000 homes, and then tell you, live the old way. Tradition, culture. Go to AFN meeting and listen at Janet Leask. I never met the lady, but she was in the paper, I think, last night. A few years ago, we were having trouble with, if you were black, white, and native, all, we'll just say, drunk in public, okay? The black might get 30 days, the white man would get off with don't drink anymore and get in trouble, and the native would go to jail for a year. It was disproportionate. They made a big study on it. It was never made public, but you can get them there, it's about that thick. And so I brought that up. It's still happening. I go to court a lot, and I listen, I watch, and I see, and if you watch the paper, I think it used to be every Wednesday, maybe it's Saturday now, this native, that, and the same crimes, and if you mark them and go up, you'll find out they're still getting the thing. Because if you've got a population of, now where they said it was 12% because more white people are moving up here, from 20-some-odd percent in the last 13 years, it's dropped, native population. How come... That's statewide.
Oh, statewide.
But go over to the jail. 69% of the inmates are native. Why? And everything is alcohol-related. See, that's where they are. You're a statistic in suicides or alcoholism. And they will give white people, come here and make all kinds of studies. And then they'll tell you what's good for you. And it's the white man keeps making the money. One time I tried to get a... thing going, it was a co-op, and the natives, I'll just say at Fort Yukon at that time was one, but I could ship a case of corn, when corn was 53 cents a can in town here, for 22 cents by buying the case, and it cost you $20 to join this co-op, and then to stay in it $1 a year. A snow machine that was selling for $1,800 and had to be shipped onto the river, I'd do the same damn thing for under $900 and deliver it to your front door. And I won't say the regional corporation here. I got jumped on and they said, keep your nose one out of our affairs. You represent Inupiaq. I said, it's all native. I don't care who you are or where you live. They said, well, if you do that, you'll put the native stores out of business. Well, I don't get around as much as I used to do, but I've been in a lot of villages over my lifetime. And I've seen a lot of tonic stores. White people. They make money off the natives. You try to start some business. Northway wanted to buy that utility a few years ago. We used to have what they call PP&E meetings, and what it was, natives from each corporation around here, and that was like Barrow, because here in every village, in like Dot Lake, United Crow Band, myself, decided, and they'd say, you got $6 million to go to the native people in this area. What are you going to do with it? And you'd decide, and you could argue. And the people go back and then go to the village and say, well, what do you need? Well, we need, whether it's toilets or roofs in the house, whatever. It was always decided. So Rosemary come up, and while she was here, I'm going to tell them we want to buy that utility and the Washateria for the village corporation, but we need the concurrence, the regional. Regional says, you people are not astute in corporate affairs, and you'll lose money and you go broke. I haven't seen Rosemary in a long time. I doubt if they ever did buy it. You can holler about electrical, BI contracts to God knows who. You turn a light off in some of those places and it looks like that yellow light is still glowing. It's a grounded circuit. That's a fire hazard. Really, they don't care. And it's a big problem. It's more than this ANSCA. ANSCA is only the top of the pie. There's a lot of stuff in the middle and a hell of a lot at the bottom. I could sit here and yak my face off all day long, and some people think I'm a jerk. I've been told that I'm the only native leader that don't get paid. I spend my own money to get guys out of jail or fix your house, and you know why? Because I feel when those people vote you in, you have a responsibility to those people that had trust in you. My father said, if you give your word or hand of trust, don't betray it, and I never have. I've lived by that, and I try to tell my kids, live by it. But these people look you right in the face and tell you lies. Anything you want to hear, what you're going to get later is different. And I think one of the things, hopefully, the study you're making is important. If more people get up here and speak the truth, speak your feelings. Maybe you, to someone else, you're wrong, but that's what you believe. And that's what they need, and you need to get it on record, and then we'll decide. And I better get back to court, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Hevel. Well, we don't have anyone else on the list, at least not on the list that I've got here, but anyone who wishes to is certainly welcome to come forward and to make a presentation. Feel quite free to do so.
I'm Mary Big Joe, and I'm from Nenana. I sit on the board of directors of Tagatili, and there are just so many things that I don't understand, but I am trying very hard to learn. And I never could understand the Land Claims Act, why there wasn't any provisions made for the elder people. Without the older people, there would be no such thing as a land claim to leave, if we have anything after this is all over, to our grandchildren. This is the way I feel about it. About 2.5 years ago, we buried an older Native Indian. With him went a lot of our traditions. About not quite 6 months before he died, he had visions of grandeur of this land claims and came to Fairbanks, charged himself up a freezer, colored TV, and the stores let him have it. Went home, 6 months later, he's dead. People have to go and BIA, Doyon, whatever, and beg for money to bury him. And this is what hurts. When they buried him, I saw a lot of traditions go. And I was very hurt and very bitter. In fact, I still am. Because the old people didn't have much. When I was growing up, within a 3-mile area of Nenana, we got our moose, we got our fish, we got our berries, our rabbits, everything you could think of, we got for subsistence. Now, you have to travel maybe 100 miles to get a few blueberries. Cranberries you can still get, but you still have to go a long ways. You don't get any raspberries, that's all dead. That's gone. Just maybe out the road you'll get some. But all of this is gone. There's an elderly native Eskimo lady that put her fish hooks out to catch what we call a lush, which is a limb cod to the white man. The Fish and Wildlife come along, made her pull out her sets, said it was against the law. She's got to have a little stick there with her name, her address, how to get telephone number and whatever, all this information. She had to pull it out. Now, there's a lot of these people that cannot live without this wild game, your moose, your fish, and things like that. Even I was brought up in the white man world, but I was raised on moose meat and things like that, and fish. I can eat beef up to a certain point, but when that old hunger for moose meat gets there, there's nothing going to stop me from going out and begging for a piece of moose meat if anybody's got any. And I do get very bitter about the older people. I feel very bad. Oh, you can't change this, they said. You can't change Anska. Yet I've had people tell me that it has been, well, the least I know of, it has been changed 9 times to benefit certain groups of people. Once a year, the older people get recognition up here. Our traditional chief comes up and makes a speech, and everybody gets up and makes a speech. Everything is fine. There's a beautiful rainbow. The birds are singing and everything. A few days later, you don't see nobody. They don't pay no more attention to them. And I don't know, maybe they're happy with it, getting that attention once a year. But I'm not. I am not.